All right, so what I wanted to do today, is maybe a little more informally than normal, is speak with you about some digital tools that I've used to try and answer questions that I've come across in my research that I haven't been able to find good answers for in other ways. In particular, I'm going to talk to you about joining two different kinds of digital tools, social network analysis software and geographic information system software. Now, if you're not familiar, and they may sound a little bit complex or difficult to use, I'll tell you up front, anyone in this room could use any of the many versions of software depending on how much time you have. So, it's true. Some of the softwares that are available that I'll introduce today are really quite easy to use. In 10 minutes, if you had the information, we could have you doing social network analysis. And in 20 minutes, if you had images and so on and locations, you could be doing maps. I'm talking about this question from sort of the higher level because I use the difference between the simpler software and the more analytical software are the tools of analysis. And so the software I use has an enormous number of tools for analysis, most of which I don't use because I don't know how. But what I do know how to use has shown me a great deal. All right. Thank you. So, I suppose this is kind of at the edge of French studies on the surface, although the underlying reasons for the problem I'm talking about have very much to do with French colonialism. And there are many parts of this problem. And is Professor Popkin here by chance? Professor Popkin, who's with us today, is one of the people who got me started on this very question because he himself, long ago, tackled this sort of very question. And so there are some of us who continue on. The question is, or concerns, an uprising in French colonial Indochina, 1930-31, which is known retroactively as the Nghệ Tinh Soviets. Okay, they're called Nghệ Tinh because they concern two provinces mainly in north-central Vietnam called Nghệ An and Hà Tĩnh. Okay? And they're contracted into the Nghệ Tinh Soviets. Why are they called Soviets? Because some of the Vietnamese who engaged in this rebellion declared Soviets, at least temporarily. Okay? And for about 4 months in between October and December 1930, French colonial authority disappeared in these two provinces, and then the French responded with an enormous amount of police and military power to quash the rebellion. You may know the story if you were familiar with the uprisings in Morocco or Syria, mass executions, state-sponsored famine, so much so that these two regions did not actually really participate in anti-colonial activity after World War II. The population was so broken. So the question is, though, for me, how did they get started? What do I use? Here are the two softwares, ESRI's ArcGIS and GEFI Network Analysis, with two other tools called GeoLayout and GEFI to Earth. You will see. Okay? The historiography of this is lots of people over the years, many scholars have looked at this very question in Vietnam, outside of Vietnam. This is the equivalent valence in Vietnam is like, I would say, the American Revolution. Okay, this is the real starting point for Vietnam's modern quest for independence. It's that kind of that on that register. Therefore, because Vietnam is a one-party state and wants to have a particular narrative, there is one narrative of this story. And asking questions about it can be a little dicey, although things are more open these days. The conclusion that scholars have made is that immiseration pushed people into rebellion. That is, a French colonial economy impoverished people to such a degree that they were desperate. Conveniently, the Communist Party was there to help and bring people into revolution that ultimately failed. Now, the question comes down, why would a communist revolution fail? The conclusion is that it was premature and that also so much force was visited that no one could oppose it. Okay, that's, I'm not actually entirely challenging that, but we'll get into more. Okay? So when I went to explore this, and my exploration originates with railroad workers that I studied for my first book. And these railroad workers in the main city in this region, which is called Ving, you would think, you know, a communist uprising, they'd be out there, right? They'd be the first ones in line to help out. Well, they all stayed home. A few came out, but not many. You know, there's about 6,000 workers, and only about 30 or 40 come out to join the protest. And that really, like, wow, this huge narrative of rebellion in Vietnam revolves around there being this uprising of workers and peasants. So that always stuck in the back of my mind, and when I came to the second research project, I go, okay, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to be the guy. Okay? So that's taken a little more time than I thought. So we're working on it. Talk to me in, you know, 10 or 20 years and maybe I'll have an answer. So what did I do? What I wanted to do is I wanted to understand the relationship of people to their place in more intimate detail than I could just simply by observation. And I knew that geographic information systems would allow me to do that. Any kind of map, digital map or paper map, can help you do that. But I had very specific records to draw upon. The French colonial government produced, just prior to these revolutions, a series of what were called the Cartes économiques de l'Annam. L'Annam was the center part of the Vietnamese part of French Indochina. And these economic maps illustrated in very careful detail, down to the level of what we would call a township, what people did in each place. So what sort of handicrafts they produced, what sort of industries they were engaged in, what sort of farming they practiced, either rice or non-rice cultivars, quite detailed. And also the location of French concessions, that is where French or sometimes naturalized French who were Vietnamese had control of land. And I found these, and they're a really valuable insight, provide valuable insight for me. So I decided to plot the relationship of where rebellions occurred to where people were engaged in certain sort of economic activities in order to determine maybe there was some hint about what was motivational. Okay? When I looked at these maps and I looked at statistics, I realized that immiseration as a general rule cannot be true. In fact, and this goes against the larger narrative that is commonplace in Vietnam, is that these individuals could not have been immiserated across the whole region. In fact, some people under the colonial economy actually were doing comparatively well by joining the colonial cash economy, by gaining access to new scientific knowledge, by diversifying their crops, and so on. Okay, so immiseration wasn't playing out, at least on the surface, as well as it might have. Now, again, I use this relatively powerful engine to do this sort of work, but you could certainly do this work and get started in something very simple and accessible and completely free, like Google Maps, okay, which we all use. Like I said, 10 minutes, you're halfway to what I do, which would have taken me 5 years. Okay? Or Neatline, which is a tool that relates with Omeka, a commonly available a freely available content management software, and so on. All right? So what I did was I tasked myself to match historical maps with historical data. Okay? Now again, and here we have many, many options. So, and I just want to point out that, you can do this too. Okay? You can do this in Google Earth Pro. You see here an example of taking a historical map and matching it to a modern projection. You can use ArcGIS Online, which is a free software product. It's very pretty, although the analytical tools the company gives you for free are limited. Mapbox, which is a little more difficult to use, but not too bad. MapsMarker, if you're someone who designs websites and you use a WordPress, it parks right into WordPress really easily. Again, these are all not hard. Okay? And then Google Maps itself. Google Maps is pretty powerful now. You can import maps and data and plot lines and all sorts of stuff. You just can't quite do the analysis yet with them, but that's coming. All right? Now this we don't need to read through. This is sort of my data sheet, what I brought together, a lot of different documents. But I ended up producing a map of North Central Vietnam in which I could access, in a series of map layers laid over one another digitally, all kinds of information. Okay, so economic activity, agricultural activity, religion, sites of rebellions, sites of military outposts, all sorts of things that I could correlate and work together. Okay, a lot of fun. All right. And here is the GIS itself at its sort of most basic form. This is what I look at when I get down to work to start. Okay, nice, clean. I can do a lot of different things with this map. So I started running analyses, okay, and asking the map and the data questions. That's all you're doing, is you're providing the machine with the information. It ties the information or the data to a map. And then you ask the map and the data combination questions. There's nothing, you know, it's just how you set up the questions that's the key. You have to think through your questions carefully. And so I asked a lot of questions, which were ultimately fruitless. So I figured, okay, maybe people who were in areas with good rice land, that is, rice has to be grown for the most part where it's flat, okay, so no slope. You can't have a sloping rice field. Could be a bad day. And I was asking me, okay, rice prices declined in 1929. Okay, so I ran that, and yes, most of the rebellions occurred in places where people grew rice. But, you know, what kind of question is that in Vietnam? Like, you know. Okay, next. Like, you know, I was like, Mr. Genius here. Okay. So then I got on to a somewhat more complicated analysis, like, okay, what about the different kinds of rice? Now, this got a little more complicated and took more time because there are 6 different kinds of rice grown in this region based on how many harvests and the particular kind. And this took a fair amount of time to ask this question. And it was quite interesting, but there was no conclusion. There was no particular pattern that I could determine. Okay? Then I combined the two, rice cultivation by harvest month and commune in less than 2% slope area. Nothing. Okay. Each of these takes time, but you know, this is part of the process. It just takes time. And then I was thinking, well, maybe people rebelled in places where they weren't growing rice. That is, quote, bad slope places. Places where people had to eat foods that were considered, in quotes, to be poor. Okay, sweet potatoes, maize, what's called dry rice, which is much less productive and nutritious. Yeah, maybe. We got 4 places that are in those, but that wasn't conclusive, and no one, that didn't really take me anywhere, okay? I was like, okay, we're just going to throw everything at the fan and see what we come up with, okay? Maybe people, like, I was going to, like, you know, then you become, like, the wacky historian. It's mulberries, you know? People growing mulberries, and then you come to conferences, and you don't comb your hair, and, you know, okay? And then no one invites you to do anything anymore, okay? So that wasn't conclusive either, okay? Pretty, but not conclusive, all right? Okay, now this is a little more serious in that one or two historians outside of Vietnam, the Vietnamese in Vietnam would never broach this topic, it's too sensitive. Was there conflict between neighboring Catholic and non-Catholic regions? Okay, Nghệ An in particular, to a lesser degree, Ha Tinh, have significant populations of Catholics for several hundred years. Okay, and this was somewhat interesting and a line, something to pursue later. Like, I want to come back to this, but it in and of itself was not necessarily conclusive, but led me to a new question. Okay, we're getting there. Like, oh, he's just going to tell us he found nothing. Fine. Okay? So, I ran out of easy questions to ask. I mean, there's 1,000 questions you could ask, like the, you know, river flow, whatever. That doesn't mean anything. I was like, you know, Del Testa, you're missing the people here. Okay? You need the people in relationship to the place and the event. So what I've done more recently is I've started to do a little bit of work in an unsophisticated way with social network analysis software. What does social network analysis software do? You introduce two sets of data, people or places, but generally people, and then their relationship to one another. Okay, so you set up a spreadsheet, in essence, of like all the names in this room, and everyone gets a number. And then what you do on a separate spreadsheet is you assign how one number relates to every other number. So I have a relationship with you, and you, and you, and you, and then you have relationships with other people, and so on. And then you match up, and then you map it. So we become nodes, the term, okay? And then you have a relationship with someone else, which is generally called an edge or an arc. All right? And then you, and then what you can do is you can measure who has the most relationships or who has the most central relationship and so on. Okay, and that was exciting. Like, wow. Okay, big fun. And this is not hard to do either. Under 10 minutes, if we had a timer, you could all be measuring your relationship with your colleagues at your home institutions using Palladio. Okay? No problem. It doesn't produce a very sophisticated visualization, but it's free, available, and easy to use. And then if you want to add the map layer, okay, which is called geolocation, that's also possible. Okay, but not in terms of analysis, but at least presentation. I use the second product, which is called Gephi. Gephi is a much more sophisticated product, but easy to use. The sophistication only comes in the fact that I am not a trained social network analyst. I have to rely on my colleagues who are to help me out to make conclusions, but it can produce really powerful analyses of relationships. It's also a French product, so there he is. I should use it. It crashes once in a while, but you know, what do you expect? Okay, and then there's the oldie but goodie, called UCNet. Okay? UCNet has been around for a long time. It's probably the most powerful of the softwares. It shows its age in terms of the interface, but it's still useful. Okay. So what did I do? I decided that I would blend a social network analysis of all the leading cadres in one particular commune. That is, the people I knew from various sources who were leaders and had influence in the places they were. And like this bunch of spaghetti doesn't really mean anything to you. There's no reason for me to explain it to you. But here is a social network analysis of Kenlop Commune. Okay, Kenlop Commune is roughly this area bound by the black line. Okay, which is right in smack dab in the middle. There was an enormous amount of violence and rebellion in that particular commune. It's very important. And then what I did was I added an attribute to those relationships, which was geographic information, latitude and longitude. Where did these people come from? Very specifically. And so I get this social network, which is tied to the geography. And then, using another little tool, I take that and I lay it over the map. Okay, and then I get... Okay, it's dim, it's hard to see. Sorry, I should have lightened it up. Is I get a very precise representation of where the leadership was, the villages they were in, or more interesting, not in, what they were proximate to, and what economic activity they were engaged in and not. Now this is a real eye-opener finally. Because then I could relate the people to the place to the event. And what I have found is, and the key is that these are the leaders, but the province itself is much larger, and that you don't see leadership outside of these main four places. Okay? And so this points me in a direction to where to focus my research more carefully. It seems like now I can determine that the main four clusters were people who were only engaged in rice agriculture, period, of a particular time. I couldn't see that before. Okay? They didn't have handicraft production or other industrial production. Okay? In addition, there are some other factors that are important. Okay? This group over here, right next to a French concession. Okay? And I have to go back to the archives and research that particular concession and what its relationship was, because I have found other places, both in the historical record and speaking with people today, that some French people who had concessions in this area were well regarded. Something else you don't talk about in Vietnam. Okay? Some people weren't. This obviously is one of the weren'ts. Okay? And so my question now that I can ask as I go further along with this is, why is there this enormous cluster of leadership right in the middle and with the other places? And I now know to look, for example, in more carefully in the tax, agricultural, and local reports for these places. I wouldn't have been able to focus my attention otherwise. This doesn't mean that I should ignore the rest of the commune, not at all. But I do know now that the rest of the commune is not participating in the leadership. And the other thing I have to now ask is, are those others supporting the French, which you also find? Okay, I have to go to a different set of records for that. And then what you could use, you can set up opposing social networks and really understand how the struggle is playing out. Right? So this is where I'm at. I haven't been able to focus on this as much as I wanted. It comes in steps and spurts and so on. But this is where I'm at now. And I wouldn't have known this otherwise. So this is becoming more interesting now. So my conclusions are, in many situations, combining digital mapping and social network analysis can help reveal hidden places to explore. Okay? I wouldn't have seen this. And I think there's many instances in French and other history where you could play with this a little. Okay, and find out not only who is central to a social network, but also where that centrality is located and why that's, and think about why it's important. It doesn't have to be complicated. Like I said, Palladio, 10 minutes, you're on your way. More complex programs give you more analytical power, but not necessarily better graphics. Okay, the big GIS product, ArcMap, okay? And again, it's easy to learn. If I can do it, you can do it too. Thank you very much.